Princess Astrology. My name is Alison Price. I'm here with my good friend Arwen O'Neill, and we're coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. This podcast period will be between June 29th and July the 12th, 2014. This session we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the upcoming transits and ingresses. We're going to talk about the moon phases, and our 360 topic this week will be Cancer.
Yes, indeed. The feminine watery sign of Cancer. Yeah, so we're going to start with, June 29th, which let's dive right into the transits.
Yes.
So, yeah, we've got Venus square Neptune that day. Venus square Neptune is an interesting one. My keywords for that are tension between fantasy and reality, especially in relationships, idealization, and illusion in relationships, like the sort of, you know.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's not quite.
Thing. not necessarily deceptive, but it could be, but maybe just, you know, where you trick yourself into seeing something.
Does he love me? Yes, he does. And really, realities avoided.
Yeah, projection, sort of maybe putting someone on a pedestal or you know.
Especially with the romantic partner, the love interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So that's a tricky one. That's June 29, isn't it? And?
And we've got Mercury, woohoo, going direct that day.
Same day. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
That sort of thing. Yeah, indeed. And then on July 3rd, we are going to have Sun opposite Pluto.
Ooh.
Confrontations, existential threats, the social order in sort of opposition to, you know, chaotic forces maybe, and power dynamics.
And I also think because the sun is like yourself and ego, you're seeing your darker side, and it might be ugly,
yes,
but you may reject it because it's the opposition.
Exactly. So maybe you'll project it onto someone else.
Exactly. So July 3, you'd really need to be careful
what you're projecting or what you're
what you're perceiving on the other. I think so. And you may be correct though. That's the thing, because it is Pluto and it will see through the deception, but it might be ugly.
You might not see through. Yeah. Yeah. So if you have any conflicts with anyone that day, you know, stand back, try to think about your stance and what you are coming to the table with, and are you really, you know, putting your best foot forward and being honest with yourself and, you know, representing yourself well.
But a conflict on that way between the sun and Pluto will actually indicate that it's timeous and it's time for change.
Yeah.
So maybe if something does blow up, it needs to be actually really looked at carefully because maybe the time has come to say goodbye.
Right. Yeah. That's true. That is true. That can happen. And, you know, this isn't a relationship thing necessarily. This is
This
could be with work.
Situations.
Know, very often, I mean, power dynamics at work, obviously, this can happen. And, you know, if you have a conflict with your boss that day, for example, or you know, that can bother, anyone that's an authority figure.
Or you get caught in a speed trap.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. The possibilities are endless. Yeah. So let's see, what else we have? July 8th, two things happening with the sun. We've got the sun square Uranus and the sun trine Saturn same day. So that's interesting. My keywords for sun square Uranus are insights coming from out of the blue, bizarre experiences, and inspiration that sort of strikes you on the head out of nowhere.
So maybe after the July 3 sun opposition Pluto, as we get up to July 8 and it's tightening up that square there.
Yeah.
You're actually going to see the light at that point,
yeah,
even though you still may not be accepting it.
Exactly, yeah. And because those two outer planets are still in, you know, in a tight square.
That's exactly
which is
it.
The ongoing, you know, over the last couple of years and continuing through 2015. Pluto and Uranus in square to each other. So the sun's obviously just triggering that whole thing. And then also the sun trine Saturn same day. That's taking responsibility, doing your duty, but it's not like a hardship. It's more of just standing up and taking responsibility, setting a good example.
Yes.
Being diligent and leading from example. You know, all those
good
for noble parenting.
Things.
Parenting. Good for parenting. Yes. Set a good example.
We try.
Indeed. And then on July 12th, the last day of our 2-week period, we've got Mercury going into Cancer.
Yes.
And this is awfully familiar. I believe that we had, because it's, you know, it moving direct again. So it'll be coming out of a fairly long retrograde period, I believe, this time. It's they're all long. They all seem long. Yeah. So sensitivity, being comforting and you know, nurturing to people, yes, conveying your emotions and offering support to others and relating communication-wise.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, and on the same day, we do have also the Venus trine Mars, which is also great for communication between genders, especially, yes, between partners, male-female relations.
A good day for your relationship. Yeah, yes.
Easy, so enjoyable, complimentary sort of feeling there. Yay.
Yes, that's pretty much the transits and ingresses for the time.
Indeed. And the moon.
So the moon, yes. Yeah, so moon is always moving.
Indeed.
So during this period, we are moving into, we first quarter on the 3rd of July. So that was when the moon has come away from the new moon and it's coming into the light. I've spoken about this before. It's then moving into the lightest half of the cycle for the month, which is always a good thing. So we're still in growth and possibilities. Mm. And then on the 12th of July, we have the full moon in Capricorn, mm-hmm, because the sun will be in Cancer, so the moon will be in Capricorn. It's not the easiest full moon because the moon is now in detriment. The sun is actually in its own sign, so not a good day for a dinner party, but a good day to sort things out at work, if you can get through the tears, I think.
Yeah, through the tears.
Yeah, because it's going to be one of those things, maybe you have to tell somebody off or they're going to tell you how it is.
Right, and with the Mercury moving into Cancer that same day, it'll be, you know, an emotional, crying at work,
absolutely,
that's a thing.
Absolutely, gosh. Because even though the words are going to invoke a response, I would say. So that 12th of July is not a day I would organise to have dinner parties, meet with the girls or any of those type of things. It's the time to take things seriously and...
And, you know, partners, you know, thing too, because of the Venus trine Mars, that'll be great, you know, time to spend with your sweetie.
Just spell it out.
That too. gosh. Proposal. No.
Or would you, at that point, you are thinking of the scenario, you're trying to tell him, I got a great job, but it's in New York.
Oh, my goodness.
That kind of conversation is probably going to go down where the career or the job is going to impact on that relationship there.
Mm-hmm. But... probably maybe a good time to say it because of the...
It's coming together at a good time, as you say, because the Venus Mars is probably going to say, okay.
Yeah. I'll go with you.
Yeah, I'll wait for you forever.
Oh. Yeah.
So we said our 360 topic is actually going to be Cancer. So Cancer's the fourth sign of the zodiac.
Yeah, it is.
It's a water sign.
Ruled by the moon.
Yes.
And it's to do with motherhood and childhood. And nurturing and
feelings, home, emotions, family.
Home, family, yes, exactly.
And your roots and where you came from.
Right, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Do you know any Cancers?
I know a couple. I don't think I know any women that are Cancers right now. But men, I've had a few, like, dear, wonderful friends who've been... who are Cancers in the past. The person who introduced our producer, my partner, Roger, and I, he's a Cancer.
Okay, and you're still friends?
Well, we haven't talked in a long time, but we are still friends. Every once in a while, we'll get a call out of the blue. He's moved to the other coast, and he's actually a father now, which is wonderful for him. And but he introduced us, and when he introduced us, he said that he knew all along that we were meant for each other, and so he'd been trying to keep us apart because we all had other partners at the time. When we finally met, he was like, "I knew it would work out. I knew you guys were meant for each other. It was just a matter of time," which is adorable. It's a great thing to say, and I believe him because it did happen that way, and it worked out perfectly. But yeah, and the other one, and this brings in some themes of Cancer. The other friend is actually a former employer of mine who turned into great friends, and we used to get into these epic conversations about history and Napoleon and the Titanic and all these wonderful things. And he had an atlas on his wall, and we would, you know, stand in his office, and he would say, "Okay, and Napoleon's troops," and he'd be showing me on the map, and they moved all the way up here.
History,
exactly. So all these great sort of themes. Patriotism, nationalism, all these things are very associated with
the
Cancer.
The flag.
Yep, both the U.S. and Canada have their suns in Cancer.
Yes.
July 1st and 4th.
Both. That's right. And the Cancer very often like to, even at work, they like to make a family
Yeah.
of their group.
Yep.
So if you come within their sphere,
yeah,
they will be bringing you cookies and attending to things, yeah, making you feel welcome.
Yep.
So they, even though it's family, they actually accept others who are close by into, totally, their family too, if you, under the protection.
Exactly. If you find yourself crying at work, the cancer in the office will find, yeah, you.
Yeah. With cookies and milk, yeah, or whatever the thing, you're, is.
Crying, mm, on the shoulder. It's true. I go to the Christmas parties still from, I haven't worked for that employer for 5 years now. Every year I go back to the Christmas party, and there will be all these former employees that flock to the Christmas party still, you know,
because it's the, well, it's home, yeah, and that's what it's about. It's very interesting, that actually dynamic, if you're not a Cancerian yourself, but you could see it happening.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's fascinating. So we've got some celebrities and history people.
Okay,
let's see, I'm calling them the quintessentially Cancer.
Quintessentially Cancer.
Uh-huh. Bringing in some cross-consonant alliteration there. Lordy. Okay, so
all
these...
All hail the Virgo rising, or whatever it is.
Yeah, something like that.
So these are charts of people who have...
Who have... Well, my first little quintet, I guess, is Cancer, Sun, and Moon, both.
Okay.
And then I've got a handful of people that have the Sun and their rising in Cancer. And then a couple of in-depth, you know.
Now, this is interesting. If they've got the Moon in Cancer, it's stronger than, yeah, the Sun.
Yes.
Because the Sun is not strong in Cancer, but the Moon will top the Sun when you get this combination.
Yeah, totally.
And it's very frequently that the Moon can top the Sun in a chart.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because, of course, with being ruled by its own thing, I went through Roger, our producer, he has the Moon in Cancer. I went through a phase of knowing, like, 6 people who all had the Moon in Cancer, and I started to wonder what's... But when
and here he provides food and drink. I must, yes, tell them.
He's a wonderful
listeners.
Cook.
Yeah, every time I've been here, he's got some nibbles on the go.
Yep, and he never wants to let anybody leave. It's always just, you know, can I feed you? Can I? What can,
I know, what can we do for you? Thing, right?
And we used to have people fall asleep on our couch and just hang out, you know, so long that they would just be here for days.
Wow.
Yeah, so a while ago.
So that's Cancer Moon. So here we're, yeah, talking about people with a Moon in Cancer, which is incredibly, yeah, strong, yeah, and the Sun in Cancer, which is not so strong.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So we've got Prince William.
Do we, begosh?
Mm, and Camilla. Yes. So there's that. And another Brit, we've got George Orwell.
Okay.
Right, which is fascinating because he's, you know, talking about the, you know, I mean, one of the things that we associate so much with, you know, like, well, the end of World War II and you know, just the nation and the nation as sort of the, you know, the... well, Big Brother, you know, that's yes, a very, you know, very paternalistic sort of, you know, homeland and that whole thing. It's the dark side of Cancer, is that whole, you know, he's watching you wherever you, yes, you know, go, sort of the controlling father figure of a state sort of, thing. And, let's see, Harrison Ford. And how many times has he played like the, you know, like the president or the father figure,
yes,
of the, you know? Yeah, interesting.
It's true.
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the 5 stages of grief, you know, grief, whatever it is, the denial, something else.
Uh-huh. Coping with your emotions.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Courtney Love.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. And Cancer, Sun, and Rising people, we've got... interesting cross section here. The Dalai Lama, which, mm-hmm, we talked about once,
yes,
before. Ross Perot.
Okay.
Which is an interesting one because, yeah, I mean, just any politician really, that it's going to be interesting,
mm-hmm,
because of that. George Michael. Mm-hmm. David Hasselhoff, for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, really. I know.
But he really was that father figure when he played in Baywatch, wasn't he?
Yeah, with a little, exactly, workplace as family.
All these gorgeous women, and he never saw it. He was just a fucking,
yeah,
father.
Yeah, totally. And saving people, too. From the water. The water,
the sign
which,
of the lifeguard.
The water which will devour you if the not bay, for the, you know.
The Baywatch sign.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And Liv Tyler.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she looks like, we did that thing about the water signs on the rising,
yes,
a while ago, and she's got that look in, you know, the big watery eyes and the,
yes,
you know, big giant soft lips. And
well, you mustn't forget it's a cardinal sign, so
yeah,
they are leaders.
Yeah.
And Cancer often leads from behind. So they set you up and say, I think you should go and do this. And you say, oh, okay, and you go along and do it. But they're leading from behind.
Yeah.
They're not saying, follow me.
Yeah.
They're saying, I think you should do this and do that. And they've got their strategy going.
And the thing you're doing with your hands right now looks very much like a crab when it skitters along, you know,
yes,
in the sand.
Yes.
That's hilarious. And, I mean, let's not forget. I mean, well, we do try to forget, but George W. Bush was Cancer as well.
Really?
Yeah. And so there's that whole president. They've had a few, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But we do try to forget about that one. Let's see. So we've got a couple of amazing examples here for in-depth chart 360 Cancer people.
Right.
One of them, one of your countrymen or, you know, what have you, from London.
You know I'm Canadian now, don't you?
I know.
Who knew?
You've got the delightful accent.
Who have you got?
Antonia Fraser, the wonderful historical fiction and nonfiction writer.
Okay.
Author of dozens of books. She was the wife of Nobel laureate Harold Pinter, and she's done just a ton of biographies of some of history's strongest
biographies is
women.
Very much a Cancerian.
Biographies
they do history,
and history. Exactly.
Family
and
history.
Women. Female, like women in power.
Yes.
She did The Warrior Queens, which was about
all
the royal military women in history. Cleopatra, Boudica, Marie Antoinette.
Boudicea.
She did, yes, thank you. Mary Queen of Scots. She did biography. The, you know, all of these epic women who you know, ruled,
yes,
you know, in history. She basically has been the biographer of all
this
of these
is
women.
So interesting because Cancer rules history,
yes,
women,
yes,
genealogy,
nationalism, patriotism,
yes,
like countries, and yeah,
gosh,
I know, it's all there in her chart. It's amazing. Her chart is fascinating.
And if you've got a Cancerian in your family, they're the ones who are looking after
the
your
genealogy.
Family tree,
right? Yeah, totally.
I don't know if you do, but we can talk about that again, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And her chart couldn't be more perfect for a successful author. It's bringing history to, you know, to the mainstream and making your living on that, and bringing these powerful women back to life who, you know,
yes,
who maybe even, I mean, Boudicea, as you say, totally sort of, you know, a niche, definitely knowledge of,
yes,
you know, just a few people. And now very, you know, I mean, what's not to love about that story? Burned London to the ground,
right,
you know,
right,
avenging her daughters, basically, like, you know, sent the Romans packing, you know. I mean,
strong women in history.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Written by a Cancerian. It's classic.
Yes, and made a bestseller by a,
mm-hmm,
Cancerian.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and it's all in her 12th house, too, which is fascinating.
Okay.
So she's got Cancer rising. She's also got Venus, Mars, the Moon, and Pluto, all in her 12th house in Cancer.
Wow.
Love of history, ancestry, etc.
Yes.
Focusing on these marginalized or not so marginalized, obviously, you know, female characters, and also doing historical fiction, which is, you know, I'm sure just researched as, you know, with as much fervor as the nonfiction. And she was quite, I mean, she's still beautiful, but, you know, in her youth, you know, very, just a very dynamic and, you know, really interesting looking woman. And let's see, in her chart, she's got, well, I'll just pass this over to you as well. It's really just an interesting chart. But she's got, she's a Virgo, so that's lovely. Sun in Virgo, everything else in Cancer. And yeah, Neptune in the third house, so that's imagination and you know,
yes,
all that stuff. And yeah, it's a, great,
it's a powerhouse, isn't it? When you've got a whole, mm-hmm, you've got a whole, like, perhaps a stellium there in the Cancer with all those four there, and the three are actually within all.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
Yeah, and she's still writing, I believe, to this day.
She's still alive. You know, Cancerians are the longest living, on average, of all the stars, of all the signs.
That is interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They,
yeah,
just go on and on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so there's that. And she's got Mercury and Leo in the second house.
Mm-hmm.
So that big, you know, she was, you know, she was going to be doing the research history anyway. But
yes,
with all of that, it was, she was,
it's
guaranteed
now,
fame, fortune, and all of these books being adapted for film and television as well. Because, you know, she's the authority on all these characters that are so fascinating to us.
And we'll put these charts up on our site.
Yes. We will, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
They'll be there as you're reading it.
Mm-hmm. And our second one is on astro themes, you know, when you can look them up by just, you know, who's the strongest, you know, Cancer in their charts of everyone in history.
Okay.
This guy was like right near the top. He's 78 0.7% cancer in his chart, which is just crazy. How is that even possible?
Huge.
Huge. John Hench is his name. He was born in 1908, June 29th, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He was Walt Disney's Renaissance artist, imagineer, philosopher, animator, this is a quote, designer, storyteller, and voracious reader. He started animating in Walt Disney's animation department in 1939. By 1954, he was working on films for Disney. He developed the animatronic squid that was in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. He won an Oscar for the special effects for that movie.
Oh, squid.
Squid. Yeah, giant octopus under the sea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he moved over to the Imagineering department, this mm-hmm. is with air quotes now, and designed some of the most groundbreaking attractions at Disney World and Disneyland. He designed Tomorrowland, Space Mountain, which scared the living crap out of me when I was five. My dad took me on that ride.
Really?
I screamed the entire time, and then we got off the ride, and he got sick, and I wanted to go again. it's a roller coaster in the dark, you know?
Oh,
you
right.
go in, and you're just... You're locked Whoa. In, you're in the dark, and you're going up, and you don't know when the twists and turns and dips are coming, and you scream and scream and scream. It's fun as hell. But he designed that. He designed all kinds of other rides in Euro Disney and the one in Japan and all these, you know, and he basically worked for them every day until he, pretty much up until the day he died. He worked there for 65 years.
Wow.
Yes. So, you know. Loyalty, commitment.
He made his home.
Yeah, exactly. And he also designed the modern Olympic torch. He designed for the 1960 Winter Olympics, which were in California, which seems an odd place for the Winter Olympics, but regardless, nearly all of the recent versions of the torch have been sort of based on his design. They've been sort of modifications thereof, but he was the one that designed that first one. He died at 95 in 2004.
I rest my case.
Yes, exactly. And he had been working there for 65 years. At Disney, and he his
tenacious,
totally tenacious. His name tag apparently is in the lobby, displayed under glass at the Imagineering headquarters in California.
Gosh.
So yeah, he's got, I mean, just a pile up. He's got Mars, Venus, North Node, Sun, Neptune, Mercury, the Moon, Venus, and Mars all in Cancer. Like, that's crazy.
That's
and
huge.
Then that's all square Saturn in Aries, and it's all opposite. Uranus in Capricorn. So, just, you know, a solid, I mean...
You know, those other two won't get much of a say in. There's just so much domination.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
But they live forever.
Yeah, completely. And, I mean, dedicating his life to bringing joy to children.
And it's, you know, family,
family,
home.
The happiest place on earth, right? That's their slogan.
That's what they say.
And you almost get the sense, though, like, reading about this guy that, I mean, you know, if there was ever a spirit of Disney, you know, of... The whole, like, what they want their image to be.
Family, wholesome.
Apparently, he was, like, very similar in looks to Walt Disney himself.
Oh.
And so, when he would actually walk through the grounds, he would be frequently mistaken for Walt Disney. And he would sign autographs as him because, you know, who's going to say no, you know.
Have you been to Disneyland?
Not Disneyland. I've been to Disney World.
I've been to
five.
Disney World, yeah. Yes, yes.
I haven't been as an adult, which, you know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, sure, like, I've enjoyed certainly the films yes. and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. But one of my very best memories of, like, I think I was 6 when I saw Fantasia, and then I was 7 when I saw Sleeping Beauty, and that was the one for me. Sleeping Beauty was it.
Okay.
I sang along, and I had the soundtrack, and I would torture my parents, like, listen to it over and over and over.
Oh.
My dad could probably tell you horror stories about that. But yeah, no, Sleeping Beauty.
Strange, isn't it? We always remember our first movie, don't we?
We do.
It's kind of weird, though.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Great, great, like, you know,
great story.
Yeah. And, you know,
wholesome.
Just...
Wholesome.
Yeah, and bringing creativity and technology and all these things into, you know, into making children happy and making families happy and having, you know, all these, all these different cultures all brought under one roof, mm-hmm. like Tomorrowland and all of that. And then, you know, sort of exporting the Disneyland, you know, idea, you know, into foreign lands. And it's all, that's a little weird and imperialistic if you think about it, but then that's cancer too, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. So that's John Hench, and I'll have that chart here.
Yeah, cancer's one of those signs that you, I don't know. I don't have planets in it, do you?
Yeah, no.
No.
Oh, no, I have Saturn and cancer.
Do you?
Yeah.
How does that play out for you?
Oh, golly.
Or do we not want to discuss it?
I don't know, it's... Saturn, yeah, I mean, and it's opposite my North Node, so I suppose another way of saying that would be that it's conjunct my south node.
I know. I was just thinking the same thing.
And I did. I had a reading once with, actually, I don't mind plugging her up, you know.
Yes.
Dina DeCastro, a wonderful astrologer in Portland. She also has a podcast. Hasn't been updated in a while. Dina, if you're listening, please, please, please come back.
Always but, a fan.
Mm-hmm, totally. But we did a reading. I did a reading with her several years ago, maybe 4 years ago. And what she said about my Saturn opposite or my Saturn conjunct south node was that it could relate to a past life as in the church and a sort of a sad life as possibly a priest who maybe was disengaged from the church because of maybe a relationship that had made this person sort of torn between earthly love and their devotion to God or to their
wow.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, poor past life me. Wow. That's so sad.
Heavy.
Yeah. I know. So I just picture this, this poor nun or man of God
Hessian
or whatever, just been,
burlap outfit.
I know.
Shuffling along on a stone floor
exactly.
somewhere.
Exactly. Not so much the self-flagellating thing, but just sad and yeah. But but also, it's funny because being a Virgo, possibly there's an element of that's sort of romantic in a weird way. Because when you see these, I don't know if you've ever seen these pictures of or been to Greece and seen them, but in Greece there's these there are these monasteries,
mm-hmm.
and they're the Meteora monasteries. They're in these mountains which look like. I can't even describe them. They look like amazing, like stalactite or whichever ones go up from the ground, stalagmites. They are built on these like weird steps, like plateau steppy things, which are massive, massive mountainy things up in the sky. But they look like they were built, purposely to house a little fort where you could be, and have the high ground. And, all around you is nothing but like these crazy valleys, Grand Canyon, but only like with these crazy stalactite things with little monasteries on top of them.
Okay.
It's the most bizarre, crazy thing.
Gosh.
But they basically were up there to protect themselves from the world and to keep, and they had all these string pulley deals, which, they could bring up supplies and
things.
Oh,
I know what you're talking about. And yes.
And it's so beautiful. And I just saw that and I was like, wow, it almost makes you want to be a nun again, doesn't it?
And do you think this is Saturn conjunct with South Node in Cancer? Mm,
yeah, just having
yeah,
this
there's
weird...
The, there's the vision.
This visceral memory, what have you, of like, oh, wow,
Living alone, living a, not a stark life, but
right.
a bleak life. But...
Yeah, something like, yeah, this life uh-huh, of, sort of ascetic devotion to what have you.
Getting back to basics.
Yeah. Or something. Probably just looking at it from outside, it's probably just me going, wow, that's a beautiful castle in the sky.
Yes. Meanwhile, it's dry bread and.
Yeah, exactly. Doing your own laundry and hanging it out over the stones.
Gosh.
But it's in Greece.
Well, there's a vision.
Beautiful, yeah. Well, a link to a photo of the monastery, the Meteora Monastery, if anyone's interested. It's gorgeous.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's a strange tie-in.
I know. That's the Saturn in Cancer. Saturn is bleak. It really is. It's a oblique planet.
Yeah.
It can be very lonesome if you want it to be. It depends where it is,
Yeah, totally. And in Cancer, it's sort of, emotional
it's detriment.
Bleakness.
It's not going to be able to perform very well
sort of
anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I know.
A bit of an insight there.
I know. It's a good thing I'm a Virgo, so I can just... analyze that all to hell and not pine
not
away.
Not take it emotionally. No,
not at all.
Not with Saturn and Cancer.
No, it's just a fascinating kind of study.
Something to be looked at later with the microscope.
Exactly, under a microscope.
Oh,
yeah, totally.
Gosh.
And you?
Nothing in Cancer.
Nothing at all?
Not a sniff, no.
Oh. Lucky you. No, just kidding.
No, I've only got planets of all signs, so I really don't have much.
That's so funny.
I know.
That's cool. That's so organized of you.
Oh,
it's nice, yeah.
It does make it... What is there?
Yeah.
And the rest is just not represented at all.
Right.
So it's just... Well, that's it.
Yeah, totally. That's cool.
So, nice. That's Cancer.
That is Cancer, yeah. Well, we have a couple of book reviews
we
also.
Do.
What have you...
The book that I've brought along this time...
That is an interesting looking book.
It's called The Complete Book of Chart Rectification by Carol A. Tebbs, M-A-C-A-P.
Is it complicated?
The quick answer has to be yes. This is not something you open and say, oh, I can do that. There are many steps to it.
I see post-it notes with lots of writing on
it. I know, because that's how it is. Yeah. Rectification, for those who do not know, is taking somebody's chart who doesn't have a birth time and we say rectifying the time of birth by going back and asking them questions about events that have happened during their life, that we can turn the chart and find a suitable birth time on their birthday that would then be a rectified time and therefore cast the chart from that. Mm-hmm. So for those who don't have a good birth time, say they say I was born at noon, we all know that's not true, but maybe that you don't have a birth time. A lot of people don't, especially older people, don't have times. So rectification is a technique that astrologers employ. Some are better at it than others. Some even advertise they do it. It is quite a subject.
Wow.
I think if you have people in your family who do not have birth times, then yes, you would expend the energy required to rectify their charts, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And if they're in your family, you probably know, you know, a lot of the events that could be used to...
So if they broke their leg or they got married on 3, 5, 10 years ago, you know these things and you can adjust the time. Right. And we do it with the solar arcs and so on.
Yeah.
But if it's just the average person, I personally do not do rectifications for a couple of reasons, which I'll go into later. But anyway, so it's one of those things that if it's got someone in your family, definitely do it. But otherwise, I wouldn't even bother.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you do them?
No. I mean, I have done a couple of them, but not in a technical way.
Oh, yeah.
They knew that it was sometime in the, you know, early morning or something. And so it's easy when you only have like a few hours where
to
you're
pick
really
an ascendant, right?
Yeah, because basically you're dealing with, you know, the ascendant will be 2 hours approximately, you know.
Yes.
So you know, at most, luckily that way, you only have to really pick between probably two ascendants.
Yes.
And generally it's, you know.
You can see, right?
Because yeah,
because
your ascendant is your external, you know, your facade or whatever. And, you know, if someone has like Scorpio rising versus Sagittarius, well, it's usually pretty like. It'll be obvious, basically, you know, usually between those two. I mean, there's probably a few of them where it'll be less obvious, like Virgo and Libra. It might be a little less easy to tell, unless it was a guy, in which case it'd probably be pretty easy. Bookish versus, you know, trendy.
And then you can go with all the other planets that would maybe, is it 12th house Mars or first house Mars?
Right.
You can see those
totally,
things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
the better you know them, the better, obviously, because if there's... You know, like their Mercury in fourth house versus fifth house, when you'd pretty much, you know, you'd want to know what they studied in college or what, you know, that kind of what they're
interested
in.
Personally, I find rectification, to my mind, is, and I may go against the astrology of grain here, but to my mind, it's just a waste of time, because you may want to rectify a chart and say, oh, you're born at 9 a.m., but you still don't know.
Yep. Yeah.
And you're better off helping that client by casting a horary chart for the question that cropped up, or why they came to see you, or the consultation chart with a firm time and using that, and that's what I prefer to do.
Yeah.
But for those who do enjoy digging into history,
for someone that you know personally, it's more applicable. Than,
exactly.
Right. As a consulting thing, I can totally see that your point. Yeah. But if it's someone that you're in a constant relationship with, where it's a family member or a good friend, you might be curious to
this is why
it
it's so important to always say to someone, well, you say you were born at 9 o'clock, says who?
Yeah.
Where did you get that time from?
Right.
And you always, as an astrologer, have to ask that question, because they often will say, I am just giving you that time because I thought you needed a time.
Oh, gosh.
So that's why you always have to say, where did this time come from? And then you get the story behind what happened, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Actually, that's funny. I did hear that one time, because I'm always asking people that too. People have actually gone and asked their mothers for me, and I thank them.
Yes.
I appreciate my friends that have done that. And their mothers.
And I say to anyone listening now that if you are pregnant or going to have a child soon, get the time of birth. It's critical.
Yeah, totally.
So, but rectification has its place. A lot of astrologers do it and do it well.
Yeah.
I personally just, it doesn't go, I'm not keen on the philosophy of it sort of thing. So.
Yeah. And for mundane astrology too, it's... obviously important. We've,
we were talking last time we were here about the chart for America,
for
where
the
guy
States,
has, he's rectified the chart for America to the Scorpio ascendant as opposed to the vegetarian through rectification. So it's a technique astrologers, I think, employ a lot of the time.
Yeah, totally.
Oh. And even if you get a client and you think, oh, this time's not right, I can see she's not a Virgo, she's a Leo, you can actually then question it further. So you automatically would double check these things, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So anyhow, it's a great book and it's well written, but it is technical. This is not a beginner's book at all.
Yeah.
So that is, again, The Complete Book of Chart Rectification by Carol A. Ted. And I believe it's the best book on rectification I've read, because some of them are very complicated.
Yeah.
So I do recommend this if you want to do rectification. That,
nice.
I can say that.
Excellent. Very good recommendation.
So, yeah, so that's me. Cool. So what book have you been reading?
Well, these are, and I hate to combine two books, but I'm going to, because these are the only two books ever published by this writer. And he is amazing. Richard Ideman, I-D-E-M-O-N. And he has passed away. These books are actually compiled and edited together from conferences that he did, where he, you know, was speaking. And so they're definitely his words and, you know, audience interjections and questions and his answers to them. But he actually did not write a single book in his lifetime, which is unfortunate. His books are, there's just something really accessible.
What are the titles of these books?
Through the Looking Glass. That's a good idea.
Okay, I have that on my shelf. Yes.
Through the Looking Glass and the Magic Thread.
I think you're correct. These are books published from his words, which he didn't actually write the book. These are.
Yeah. But yeah, and
I nearly wrote that today.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Aren't they great? There's just something so.
I know, he's excellent.
Yeah, it's almost a almost a Stephen Arroyo-ishness about the way he, you know, about his style and. And just, you read it and you're just, you know, you're sucked
in. So these
in.
Must be old books you've got, because they have recently republished that Through the Looking Glass.
Mm, I did not know that. I've got these from, you know, some used bookstore. I've even got the pencil, you know, prices like in the corner that I've erased. Yeah, because I got them, you know, at some little, like great little used bookstore here.
Because I bought that one last year and it had been republished because I didn't
I'm
have...
Glad. I'm glad they've done that, because I was going to say, if you can find them, you know, but that's wonderful that they've been republished because they're so good and just really engaging and fantastic.
So are they beginner's books? Let's get back to what we're doing.
Beginner to intermediate. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of terminology. There's not a lot of, you know, super quick explanations like here's what Taurus is, here's, you know, but intermediate definitely. And sort of easy to understand intermediate.
Yes.
It's not like a lot of,
But don't you think that actually, to be honest, most of our listeners would be intermediate, because otherwise they wouldn't be listening because it's already...
Oh, yeah, unless they're friends of mine that are just listening to be polite. And thank you, all my friends.
Alan's friends, yes. So basically the idea is that you have a little bit of astrology knowledge and then you listen and then, so these are the books for you.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, and the other book is called...
It's The Magic Thread. This one is Astrological Chart Interpretation Using Depth Psychology. And the other one is Through the Looking Glass, A Search for the Self in the Mirror of Relationships. And like just as
Excellent books.
Tidbits about relationships, this is one of the greatest books for that. Like I'm constantly just setting it on the nightstand and, you know, reading like a bit before bed and just open it to any page and you'll find some crazy little, you know, just kernel of really interesting resonant
And you read this at
information.
Night?
Yeah.
Is that what you just said?
That's where I read most of my books is in bed. I don't know if that's a weird thing.
No, not at all.
Okay, cool. I had a friend who said that she could never read when she went to bed because she would just get way too into... She reads fiction and she would just get too into the story and she would never go to sleep.
Yeah.
I was like, really? I found that fascinating.
I like to read, yeah.
I love to read in bed, but I read and then I get tired and then I put it to the side and I go to sleep. It doesn't keep me up. I don't know. Yeah. I probably stay up way too late anyway.
Down to it
by the time I go to bed, it's like, it's probably...
What are you, an early bird? Late bird?
Late bird, yes.
An owl.
I am one of those, I've got to go to bed now. You know, it's like so late, I need to...
I'm an early bird, I'm a
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I'm constantly saying, no, just one more episode. Like if we're, you know, watching some show on Netflix and we're piling through an entire season of them, I'm constantly saying, just... one more episode and then I'm done. I'm going to bed. I've got to get up in the morning.
No, I've never been much for being up late, but I don't know what that's sort of been the chart somewhere. But I've always been an early bird.
Interesting.
But relatively early.
Yeah. Well, I've had to be because I've always had jobs during the day, but
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Luckily now I don't have to get up and go outside to work. No, I just get up and turn the computer on in my robe.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy. Technology.
Okay, excellent books.
Yeah, totally. With that, I think it just wraps up our cancer episode.
Yes. And very interesting.
Yeah, it's a good sign. Well, thank you for joining us.
And we want to give our email address out.
Yes, exactly.
For our questions.
Yes, definitely we do. We would love to hear from everyone. Accessastrology@gmail.com. Let us know what you'd like us to talk about. Questions.
Questions about what we have spoken about if we're not clear.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Tell us what's on your mind.
Totally. Exactly.
Yeah. Access Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toes. I am Arwen O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thank you for joining us.
I'll see you next time. Okay.